Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Yuma, daf Nun Daled. We're on Gimel Mid Beis. We've got to finish up to the Mishnah, and then we obviously take it up from the new Mishnah. The Kohen Gadol would make a short tefillah upon exiting the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Right, we are at the point now in the Avodas Yom HaKippurim, where he has placed down the Machta Shel Gachalim, he placed down the coals, the pan full of coals, on the in front of the Aron, or in the second base of Mikdash, where the Aron was, between the Shtei Habadim, between the two poles, or in the second base of Mikdash, where the two poles were once were. And then on top of that, he would lay down the Ketores, exactly how he'd lay down the Ketores, as we saw in yesterday's daf, for subject to a Machlokas, but basically he would lay down the Ketores so that he would not burn his hands. Abayi says that seems to be the logical conclusion. So that means that he would start away from himself and he would move the Ketores towards himself. And now the Ketores would create a smoke, and the smoke would go straight up, hit the ceiling, spread out over the ceiling, and drop down over the walls. So he was literally in a cloud of smoke. He was surrounded by smoke on all sides. He would then, after making the smoke, he would then exit. He would exit the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and the reason why he would exit is because now he's got to get the blood, which we're about to see in the upcoming Mishnah. But prior to his exiting the Heichal, the Mishnah's language is he would stop in the Beis HaChitzon. Just to quote the language of the Mishnah, Yatza uvalo b'derech beis knisaso u'mispal tefila k'tzar b'beis achitza. So he would go to the Beis Achitza. It is not abundantly clear exactly where he stopped to make the short tefila. The Mishnah's language of Beis Achitza is somewhat vague. The Rashi in the Mishnah, if you take a look back on Nun Beis Amud Beis, so Rashi in the Mishnah says that the Beis Achitza is a reference to the Heichal. Okay, so somewhere in the Heichal. But again, remember, not only was nobody in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, but nobody was in the Heichal as well. So he was alone. He was alone in both. So sounds like he stopped in the Heichal, and the Mishnah says he would say a tefillah katsar, he would say a short prayer. What would that short prayer be? So the Mishnah doesn't say. So the Gemara asks exactly that question. So my matzli. That's a Gemara's question. So what is he davening? So Rava Baravada Vravam Baravada Tarvay Mishmay de Rav Amre, Yihira Tzom Fanecha Hashem Lakenu Shetei Shanazu, Gishuma Ushchuna. He prays for the year, and he prays that the year be a year of rain and a year of heat. To which the Gemara says, okay, look, I understand rain. Rain makes sense. Okay, we need the rain. But we don't really need the heat. So the Gemara asks the question, Shchuna Mal Yasehi? That's really? We want heat? Ela'ema Im Shchuna Te Gishuma. So the Gemara says, now, what he meant by that is that if it happens to be a year that's very hot, so then could you please complement that with a lot of rain? Now there was other addendums that were added. Now it's funny. The Amoraim here can't be adding to the tefillah because the Amoraim are not saying the tefillah. The tefillah was said by the Kohen Gadol. So I guess what the Gemara over here is trying to communicate to us is that other Amoraim have different opinions in terms of what the Kohen Gadol said, or maybe this was said on different occasions. I'm not totally sure. But here we go. Here's some other versions of the tefillah. Lo yade avid shultan mid debes Yehuda. The shultan, the scepter, the throne should not depart from Beis Yehuda. Meaning, like the pasuk says in the end of Parshas Vayechi, in the middle of Parshas Vayechi, lo yaser shevet mi Yehuda. The shevet shouldn't leave Yehuda. Yehuda should become the king and should continue to be the king. Velo yuamcha yisrael tzrichon lafarnes emizeh. And also, Jewish people shouldn't have to need one another. In other words, everyone is self sufficient and dependent. Velo tikanos lafanecha tefilas over drachim. And people are traveling, so do me a favor. They're going to pray to you to stop rain. Don't listen to them, the Kohen Gadol says. Meaning, certain tefillahs I want you to accept and certain tefillahs I want you to ignore. I want you to ignore the people davening for rain. Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa have a kaza ba'or chashad mitra Allah. The Gemara follows up with a story regarding Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa. He was traveling and... Havakaazabaorte, he was traveling at night and Shad Mitra Elaine and started raining. Amri Banasha Olam Kola Onum Kulam Banachas Vechanina Bitsar. Look, everyone else is happy. It's raining. I'm not. Could it please stop? Pasak Mitra and he asked Akash Baruch for it to stop raining. Okay, and it stopped. Kiyasala Basi Amri Banasha Olam Kola Onum Kulam Bitsar Vechanina Banachas. And now when he gets home, he says, okay, Kadosh Baruch Hu, could you please turn the faucet back on again? Because now I'm home, I'm comfortable. Can everyone else get the rain that they want? Asamitra, and now comes the rain. So Rabbi Chinan ben Dosa obviously had very effective tfilos.
He had a direct line.
Yeah, correct. The Gemara and Tanis, we're going to see story after story in the Gemara and Tanis, where various Tanaim and Amoraim basically, you know, some of them made demands, meaning, right, this is, I need this. I'm Rabbi.
I need this.
I'm Rabbi Yosef. My Ahanya leits luce de Kohen Gadol Gabi Rechanina Mendoza. And Rabbi Yosef just simply comments, and he says, I'm sure the tefillah of the Kohen Gadol was unbelievable. But can you even compare it to Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa? I mean, look at that. He asks, or as Hedy points out correctly, he says, okay, no rain. He says, back to rain. Meaning, even the tefillah of the Kohen Gadol is not as good as the tefillah of Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa. There was an incident with the Kohen Gadol. The Gemara does not identify who the Kohen Gadol was, but he was being marich. He extended his tefillah. And now the Kohanim outside are like, oh no, what do we do? Because again, remember, people did not survive the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Kohen Gadols died in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So any delay in him coming out would automatically lead everyone to the anxiety and the stress to think something happened. So the Kohanim outside are all wondering, and finally after convening, after a couple of meetings, they finally decide, okay, let's go in. And as they're going in, the Kohen Gadol comes out. So they say to the Kohen Gadol, that was a mistake. Don't do that. You're schlepping your tefillos. Don't do that. So the Kohen Gadol puts the guilt trip on them. And he says, look, I was davening for you. I was davening for the Beis HaMikdash. Like, in other words, what's wrong with what I did? So they said, look, you're good. Your intentions were all great. Love it. But don't do that again. The Sharei Shanina Lo Yomarch B'Tfilaso Kedeshala Lo Lahavis Yisrael. Because look, your tefillos might be great, and your kavanas might be great, but you're scaring Jewish people. Don't scare Jewish people. Not even at the expense of davening. Davening cannot be done at the expense of friending others. Okay, the Rav here spoke couple of days ago about possible applications of this principle. But okay, you get the basic idea. In other words, nice intention, not the right time. We continue now with the Mishnah, Mishinita Aaron. Now the Aaron was taken, meaning the second base of Mikdash, there was no Aaron. So, where was the Machta placed? Now again, if we had an Aaron, and we had the two poles coming out from the Aaron, we know exactly where the placement of the Machta should be. But in the second base of Mikdash, there was no Aaron, there was no Badim. So, where was the place? Eben Isa Sham, Mihimos Nevi'im Arishon, so there was a stone there. And the stone was there from the Nevi'im Arishon, and Vishisiyah, Haisa Nikres. And the stone's name was Shesia. We'll talk more about the name of the stone later in the Gemara. Kavom and Arshal Shetzpos, it was raised from the ground 3 etzpos, so 3 inches off the ground. Ve'alah ha'yanosein. And that's where you would put the machta, on the Evan HaShesia during the Bayit Sheni. Okay. Now tell us the Dami Misha Yamam Arisbo. Okay, and now we're continuing with the Avoda. Okay. So we are now at the point where it's created the cloud of smoke. The pan is down on the floor. The Ketoros is on top of the pan. He now exits. Upon exiting, he makes a Tefillah Ketzara. And now what? Now he's got to get the blood. Now how many bloods is he getting? So the answer is going to be 2. The par that he already shechted, and the seir that he's going to shecht. And the Gemara here is going to give us in detail the sequence of the Hazas Adam, the sprinkling of the blood of the par and of the seer. Nichnas l'makom shenichnas v'amad l'makom b'makom she'amad v'hiza mimenu. So, did I start from Natal? I'm sorry. Let me just go back one line. Nasal d'adam e'misha yamamar. So we take the blood from the one who was stirring it. Remember, the person stirring the blood so that the blood shouldn't congeal. Now he goes back into the Kodesh HaKadoshim and exactly where he once stood before. And then he sprinkled the blood a total of 8 times. 1 above and 7 below. Now the truth of the matter is that the one above and the one below, it didn't have different destinations, but it ended up looking like a matzlif. Later in the Gemara, we're going to discuss exactly what that means and how exactly the bloods were sprinkled. The kachayamona. Now as he sprinkled, so he would count. Achas. In other words, when he did the first one, Lamala, so he counted one. Achas ve'achas. Now, the next seven, so he's going to count as he's sprinkling his finger down, so now he's going to count another seven. But always keeping in mind the one that he did up. So the next count is going to be achas ve'achas, meaning the one that I did up already, meaning even though he already counted that, but that always remains in the count. And the achas, and the second achas is the one that he does below. Achas ushtayim. Then the one that he did up again. It's not a new one that he's doing up. He just keeps that one in mind as he's sprinkling the ones that are down. Achas v'shalosh, achas v'arba, achas v'chamesh, achas v'shesh, achas v'sheva. Fine. So those are the eight hazars, the eight sprinklings that he does with the blood of the bull in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, in the direction of the Aron. Yatsav v'nichu al kein hazahar shebehechal. Now he's got to put the bowl down. Remember, those bowls did not have bases. So there had to be a special base in order so they could put the bowl down. So the reason why the bowls didn't have bases is because they never wanted the bowl to be resting on the ground. Because once the bowl gets rested on the ground, the blood's going to congeal. So therefore, all the bowls that were in the base of Mikdash did not have a base, didn't have anywhere to basically settle on the ground. So, but in the case of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur, again, he's a one-man show. So, and he's going to need to get a second bowl. So there was a base that was created so that he could put the one bowl down, the blood of the bull. He vilos the seir. Now he brings him the goat. Now remember, at this point in time, the goat hasn't been shechted. The goat's been identified. We had the selection back in the fourth perek, but the goat hasn't been shechted yet. Shechted the kibbutz ben mizrak es damo. They shechted the goat. They collected the blood in the bowl. And he goes back to the same place in the Kodesh HaKadoshim with the blood of the goat. And then he would sprinkle again, one above and seven below. And then he would count the same way he counted with the blood of the bowl. And now he would go out to the heichal and he would put this bowl, it's the second bowl, on the base. In other words, there was a stand that held. This stand held two bowls. Why? Because the Kohen Gadol Yom Kippur was working with two bowls. So this stand would hold two bowls. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Lo Yesham Elokein Echad Bilvad. Now Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. Rabbi Yehuda says that this stand only held one bowl. And so basically what the Kohen Gadol would do is he'd have to switch. He would pick up the bowl of blood and put down the bowl of the goat. Now the next sprinklings, this is now sprinkling number two. Again, I'm counting the par in the seer as one, this inside, and the par, right, to 1A and 1B, if you will. Now this is 2A and 2B, so he takes the blood of the bull, and he sprinkles now in the direction of the curtain, in the direction of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, as he was standing in the Heichal. Achas amal v'shev lamata, same formula, one above, seven below. V'loyam is kaving, v'kachayamone, and the Mishnah says, and you know the story, meaning in the counts, and the achas v'achas, achas v'shtayim. Now it's also damasir v'nech damapar, v'hizamim en alaparach, sh'kenegen aromim b'chutz achas amal v'shev lamata. And then he would take the blood of the goat, and do the seven sprinklings, one above, seven below, on the paroches, on the curtain separating the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And then he would mix the two bloods together. He would pour one blood into the other bowl, and then he would pour it back into the empty bowl to get a good mixture of the two bloods. The Mishnah stops over here. The next Mishnah, we're going to see that the mixed bloods are going to be sprinkled onto the Mizbech Azov in the Heichal. Okay, period. Adkan Divrei HaMishnah. We start right away with the Gemara. Mishenignav lo ketani ala mishenitel tanan. Notice, says the Gemara, that the Mishnah says the Aron was not hidden, the Aron was taken. The big difference. Big difference between being hidden versus being taken. Kamanda Amar Aron Gila Bavo. So this is Shades of Shkalim. You remember we talked back in Shkalim about where what happened to the Aron? So we know, again, we saw just yesterday's daf, that Yoshio took the Aron and he was gonies, and he put in Geniza. Okay, and then what? Meaning, what happened to the Aron for the destruction, before the destruction of the first temple? So as we're going to see, it's subject to a machlokus amongst the Tanaim, debate. Now this shouldn't sound strange to us. We were just here in Shkalim. When we did Masechta Shkalim, the Gemara and the Yerushalmi spent the daf also discussing what happened to the Aron after the destruction, or I should say rather, immediately prior to the destruction of the first temple. Much like the Gemara in Shkalim, the Gemara over here is going to give us a number of opinions. There's not going to be one singular thought in terms of where the Aron went. So, but our Mishnah tips us off with one clue, with one word. Our Mishnah does not use the word geniza. Geniza gives the indication that it didn't go anywhere. It was just hidden in the somewhere in the labyrinth of the Beis HaMikdash. That's the that would have been had the Mishnah said the word geniza. It does not. It says the word netila. Netila means it was taken away. So, according to one opinion, Mishnigdas Oktani La Mishnital Tanan Kamanda Amar Gil Bavel. So, our Mishnah seems to subscribe to the viewpoint that the Aron went to Bavel with the Jewish people. Rabbi Lazar Omer Aron. I'm sorry, Ditanya. And here the Gemara is going to quote a Braisa. So, we're going to see over the course of this morning a number of Braisos that deal with this issue of where is the Aron. So, the Braisa over here starts off with the opinion Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer Omer Aron Gil Bavel. Rabbi Lazar says the Aaron was exiled to Bavel together with the Jewish people. We were sent to Bavel im kli chemdas beis Hashem, with the kli chemda, with the beloved keli. Rashi points out, as I'm sure we all figured out already, that's a reference to the Aaron. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Omer Aaron gil Bavel. The Rashbi says that the Aaron was exiled to Bavel. Now keep this in mind, because in just a couple of lines from now, the Gemara is going to point out that others have others not only disagree, but disagree with to what the Rashbi actually says. According to this Braisa, the Rashbi says that the Aaron was exiled to Babel. Shenemar lo yoser devar amar Hashem elu aseres adibro shebo. The pasuk describes how there was no longer the aseres adibros, meaning the that which held the Aseres HaDibros, which again is a reference to the Aron. And according to the Rashbi, the Aron was not there anymore, meaning where was it? It was sent out to Bavel. I can only give you so much information. And it's not because I'm withholding. It doesn't seem so. According to these opinions. Rav Yehuda ben Lakish, now Girsa, as noted on the side in the Yerushalmi, it was Rav Yehuda bar Eli. Meaning Rav Yehuda ben Lakish is usually referenced to Reish Lakish, and Reish Lakish is an Amora. So you're not going to find him in the Braisos. All right, so he points on the side, could be Rav Yehuda bar Eli, could be just simply Rav Yehuda, meaning Rav Yehuda Eli. Anyway, Omer Aron bimkomo nignaz, a divergent opinion. He says that the Aron would stay there in Yerushalayim. It was just simply tucked away somewhere in the labyrinth of the Beis HaMikdash. Shenemar v'yiru Hoshei Abadim menekosh al pnei adver v'lo yiru achutza v'yusham ad hayom hazeh. The key word in the Pasuk in Malachim is it was there until this very day. Now, who's reading that Pasuk in Malachim? You and I. Right? 2,000 years later. 2,000 years later after the Chorban of the second Beis HaMikdash. This Pasuk is a description of the first Beis HaMikdash, of Shlomo HaMelech. But you and I are reading it. And when we're reading it, what are we reading? Ad Hayom Hazeh, it's there to this very day. So it sounds like the Aron's in Yerushalayim, in the area of the Beis HaMikdash, Ad Hayom Hazeh. So it gives Rav Yehuda ben Eli, or Rav Yehuda ben Lakish, the idea that it wasn't taken anywhere. It is in Yerushalayim, it's in the Makom HaMikdash, just tucked away. Upligi de Ula. Now the Gemara notes, Ula disagrees. What does that mean, Ula disagrees? Ula is an Amara. The Rashi points out, Ula disagrees with what exactly is the opinion of the Rashbi. In the previous Braisa, we have the Rashbi opining that it went out to Bavel. Now the Gemara notes that Ula disagrees. The Amar Ula Shal Rabbi Masya ben Charash is Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Barami. Rabbi Masya ben Charash had an opportunity to speak to Rashbi. Now why is that an opportunity? Why don't they speak all the time? So Rabbi Masya ben Charash lived in Rome. The Rashbi went to visit Rome. So given that occasion, so they had the opportunity to speak. Now it happens to be that I know the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer, meaning they're discussing the fate of the Aron. What happened to it? So he says, I spoke to Rabbi Eliezer, I know what he says. Twice he says the Aron was taken to Bavel. Rishon Hadam Aron, in other words, we already have the first pasuk that spoke to the idea that the Aron was taken to Bavel. That was the pasuk that we quoted earlier in Divrei Hayamim. That's the Kli Chemda pasuk, right? Shnia Maihi. What's the second pasuk that speaks to the idea that the Aron was exiled to Bavel? My kol hadara, chadara. So the word hadara is also cognate with the word chadara. The hey and the ches are interchangeable letters. We've seen Just the other day in the daf, we've seen a version of this. The mihi yos miseh, the michi yos miseh, the hay and the ches are interchangeable. So the hadara could also be a word of reference to chadera. And as Rashi points out, haganos bechadre chadarim, that which is kept in the most sacred of places, meaning the Kodesh HaKadoshim, meaning the Aron. So the Pasuk says, it was taken from Bat Zion, meaning it was taken from Zion. So another reference to the idea that the Aron was taken out of Yerushalayim and ostensibly taken to Bavel together with the Jewish people. Ata mayata omer. So now, Rabbi Masi, when speaking to the Rashbi, says, look, I know Rabbi Eliezer's opinion. Good. What's yours? What's your opinion? So Amar lo shani omer, Aron bimkom nignas. So Rashbi says, I disagree. Aron didn't go anywhere. Aron was in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Again, not in there, as we already know. We have countless Mishnayos that say that it wasn't there. In countless Gemaras that said it wasn't there. But in other words, it was tucked away somewhere in the labyrinth of the Beis HaMikdash. But it was there. It wasn't taken anywhere. Shenemar vayarichu abadim. And what pasuk does he quote? He quotes a pasuk from Malachim Aleph that we quoted earlier. The pasuk that speaks to the idea that it was there ad yom hazeh. Okay. So Amalei Rabba Leula my mashma dechsev ayu sham ad yom hazeh. So the Gemara says, how do you arrive at that conclusion? So the Gemara points to the end of the pasuk which we pointed to. That the pasuk says it was there ad yom hazeh. V'chol eicha dechsev ad yom hazeh la'olam hu. So you mean to tell me that every time in Tanakh we have an ad hayom hazeh, it means forever. Now again, it makes sense because the Tanakh is meant for us, meaning we're reading the Tanakh. So when it says ad hayom hazeh, it means to this very day. So, and we're supposed to take it literally, meaning to this day. So the Gemara says, V'aksi v'esi yavusi yoshev yushalayim lo harishu b'nei ben yamin. V'yashav hayavusi es b'nei ben yamin yushalayim ad hayom hazeh. So the Gemara says, let's test your theory. That every time it says ad hayom hazeh, it means to this very day. The pasuk in the beginning of Shoftim points out that the Yavusis were residents of Yerushalayim. And the B'nai Binyamin didn't chase them out, says the beginning of Sefer Shoftim. V'yashav Yavusis B'nai Binyamin Yerushalayim ad hayom hazeh. And Yavusis reside in Yerushalayim to this very day. True? True or not true? So the Gemara notes, not true. Meaning, we don't even have to go to the year 2014. Meaning, we can... It's already been not true for many years. Centuries, millennia. Hachinami de lo galu v'hatanya. And the Gemara points out, now what do you want to tell me, that the Yavusi were not exiled out of Yerushalayim? It's not true. Yavusi were exiled out of Yerushalayim. Rav Yehuda omer chamisha meshtayim shana lo avra ish b'Yehuda. After the destruction of the first temple, Nebuchadnezzar desolated Yerushalayim. Nebuchadnezzar expelled every resident out of Yerushalayim. And Yerushalayim was bereft of people for 52 years. 52 years that Yerushalayim had no occupancy after the destruction of the first temple. Shenemar, the pasuk says, Al harim asabechi v'neiv al neos midbar, kina kinitzesumi bli ish over, no one walked through Yerushalayim. V'lo shamu kol mikne me'ofa shamayim v'ad be'ema. There weren't animals in Yerushalayim. Nadadu halachu behem, I'm sorry, nadadu halachu. They were totally exiled out of Yerushalayim. And how do we get to 52 years? Behema b'gamatria, chamishim v'shtayim havu. So the Gemara employs the method of gamatria. The word behema in gamatria is 52. For 52 years, there was no traffic in Yerushalayim. V'tanya, Rabbi Yosi, omer sheva shanim niskaimu gafris v'melech be'eretz Yisrael. 7 years, there was gafris v'melech. Salt and sulfur over the Eretz Yisrael. V'amar Rav Yochanan, my taima de Rav Yosi. Asya bris. He learns it through Gzeir Shavik, Siv Hacha, V'gvir bris l'rabim Shavua Echad. There was a bris for the masses for Shavua Echad. Shavua Echad literally means a week, but over here it's in the context of 7 years. Uksiv Hasam Amru al Asher Azvu is bris Hashem. They left bris Hashem. Elokei Avosam. So, stop over here for just a moment. The Gemara has just finished asking a question. So, but before we answer the question, so let's articulate the question just a little bit better. Again, ad hayom hazeh is, the Gemara is theorizing, means that whenever you see that words in Tanakh, it means forever. Till this day, whoever's reading the Tanakh, to this very day, it means forever. The Gemara points out it can't be, because Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the first base of Mikdash, but more than destroy the first base of Mikdash, exiled every inhabitant of Yerushalayim from the city of Yerushalayim. Jew, non-Jew alike, doesn't matter. Everybody was exiled outside of Yerushalayim. And the Gemara notes that that occurred for 52 years. Just for a moment, just to explain 52 years, Rashi goes through the numbers. I'll do it quickly, but see Rashi for a little more elaboration. See the Gemara and Megillah for more elaboration on this. But basically, Nebuchadnezzar took 1 year after ascending to power as being the head of Nineveh, so that he started his descent on Yerushalayim. And he conquered Yerushalayim. He didn't destroy Yerushalayim, he conquered Yerushalayim. At the time, the king of Yerushalayim was Yehoiakim. And then Yerushalayim was destroyed 18 years later. So we know that the exile of the Jewish people from the first temple to the second temple was a total of 70 years. But 70 years doesn't represent the destruction of Jerusalem. 70 years just simply represents the exile. After the first year of Nebuchadnezzar, Yehoiakim was sent into exile. And there were still kings after that. There was Yehoiachin, there was Zedekiahu, Yechaniah. There were kings after Yehoiakim, but the exile began after the first year of Nebuchadnezzar. Only 18 years later was the Beit HaMikdash destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar. So take 70 years of exile, take 18 years away from it, and that's how you end up with 52 years. 52 years, meaning post-destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, those are the years where there was simply no inhabitant in Jerusalem. So that just a quick overview of those 52 years. In the meantime, however, the question has been asked, and it's a strong question. Even though the pasuk in the beginning of Shoftim says that there were Yevusi in Yerushalayim on Yom Hazeh, but it's not true. There wasn't anybody in Yerushalayim for 52 years. So the Ad Yom Hazeh just simply doesn't speak truth. Or doesn't seem to speak truth. So the Gemara's answer is... Which part of the Guzma? The Nebuchadnezzar destruction?
No, the fact that it lasted for such a long time, it seemed like it lasts forever.
It could be. But Amar Leh Hachik Siv Sham Hasam Lo Siv Sham. So the Gemara is going to qualify, and the Gemara is going to say, well, maybe it depends on whether or not the word Sham is there or not. Meaning, you have to look for the key word of the Yusham Arayom Hazeh, it was there until this very day, versus the Pasuk in Shoftim, which just simply said Arayom Hazeh, without using the word Sham. And so, with that one extra word, so that may indicate that literally Sham, there till this very day, which then would mean, again, we could resurrect our Pshat, and that would mean that the Aron is there till this very day, meaning the Aron's in Yerushalayim, as opposed to the Yevusi, which the Navi in the beginning of Shoftim doesn't use the word Sham. So the Gemara says, really? Even with this qualifier, it also doesn't seem to be true. The Pasuk in Divrei Yamim describes the conquering of the Bnei Shimon of various regions of Eretz Yisrael. And they stayed there Ad Yom Hazeh. Now we're talking about some of the northern tribes. And they were there Ad Yom Hazeh. And the Pasuk says, Vayeshvu Sham Ad Yom Hazeh. And is it true that the northern tribe are still in Israel to this very day? It hasn't been true for thousands of years. And the Gemara notes this. Ukvar alasan cherev melech asher. Ubilbo kol aretzo shenemar v'asik v'los amim v'asudo sehem sosasti. So the Gemara says that obviously represents a significant problem to our theory. Our theory was that if it says Sham Ad Yom Hazeh, that's to be taken literally. But the Pesukim and Divrei Yamim certainly do not reflect this idea to Yufta. And the Gemara ends the discussion by saying that's a problem. Meaning, okay, so much for our theory. It was good. It was a good theory. We tested it a couple of times, but disproven. Okay. So I don't know if that changes. Yeah. I don't know if that changes the Rashbi's opinion. Meaning the Rashbi says that the Aron was in Yerushalayim. And one of his sources was Ad Yom Hazeh. Right. And it even says Sham Ad Yom Hazeh. So although the theory has been disproven, I don't know if that's going to change the
source or somebody else's
source. You're right. That's right. The Rashbi doesn't use that as a source. It's the explanation of the Rashbi.
Right.
Amale Rava Lula Mai Mashma. You're right. Could be the Rashbi doesn't use that as the source. Rav Nachman, Tan v'chacham, Amrim, Aron, Balishkas, Dir, Eitzim, Hayaganus. Rav Nachman gives us now a third opinion. So again, one opinion which is expressed by Rabbi Eliezer and Rashbi, version number one, is that the Aron went to Bavel. Another explanation is that the Aron didn't go anywhere. It stayed in Yerushalayim, it stayed in the Makom HaMikdash, tucked away underneath, somewhere in the labyrinth of the Beis HaMikdash. Opinion number three, it's not that divergent opinion, is that it was in Lishkas HaEitzim. Right? If you go outside the Azor, you go to Ezra Sanashim, and you go into the Lishkas HaEitzim, it was buried somewhere underneath the Lishkas HaEitzim. Now this is the opinion that we're familiar with. This is the one that we saw in Shkalim, back in Shkalim. Again, the Gemara in Shkalim went through these other opinions as well, but the Gemara in Shkalim spent some time on this opinion. Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchak Afanan Namitanina. The Gemara says, we learned this opinion. In fact, it's a Mishnah Shkalim. There was a Kohen Echad, and if you remember the Gemara Yerushalmi that we did back in Shkalim, meaning what was his job? He wasn't doing the Avoda. He was looking at the worm and taking the worms off of the wood. So Uvav and he was in the Dir HaEitzim, and he looked at the floor and he noticed one of the tiles seems to have been off. Something was buried underneath. Uvav Odias Chavero, and he figured it out like a light bulb went in his head, and he went to tell people, "Hey, look what I just discovered." Velo Hizbik Ligmor Sadav Ashiyasa Nishmaso, and before he got to speak, so he died. Kadosh Baruch Hu did not want this information revealed.
If you couldn't tell me, how do we know this story?
Yes, how do you know that?
I think you asked me this back in Shkalim. Okay.
What did he answer?
Go play the tape.
You don't remember, he doesn't remember. I think it says he seems to say that he told him he saw this tile, but he...
But then the sentence after that doesn't come out. And at that point in time, we knew b'yichud that's where the Aaron was hidden. So what was he doing there? So our Gemara says, now I don't remember the Yerushalmi super well. I don't think the Yerushalmi told us this. But the Bavli here says he was playing with an axe. Yeah, okay. So I don't know what the significance of that is, but anyway. There were two Kohanim who were Bali Momim. They were blemished, so that means that they're not doing the Avodah, but they made themselves useful, and they dewormed the wood. So that means that they were in the Lishkas HaEitzim. One of their axes by accident slipped off, v'nafla sham, and fell there, meaning in the area in the Dir HaEitzim where the Aron was buried underneath, v'yatza ishva chalto. A fire came out and consumed the axe. A pretty good sign that something strange is over there. Something different. Rav Yehuda Ramiksiv, Rav Yehuda noticed a discrepancy between the psukim. Okay. Basically, Adkan, meaning until this very point in time now in the Gemara now gives us hints and allegations and basically, you know, a little bit of a goose chase in terms of where to find the Aron. So either you go out to Bavel, or you go somewhere in the Beis HaMikdash, or right outside, immediately outside the Azar into the Dir HaEitzim, and that's where you start hunting. I'm sure this would make a great movie. Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
It's in the Arab section?
It's in, I don't know. No, I'm not the person to talk to. I don't know the geography well, the modern geography. The best I can tell you is the western wall of the Harabais, but...
No,
this is not the Harabais. This is Yazara. The Harabais is the area...
That section on top, right up?
No. The Harabais is a large area. In other words, if we were to draw the Harabais, it's 500 Amma by 500 Amma. This is in the Harabais area.
Where's the Kotel? Kotel is...
No, the Kotel is like west wall. Not this wall. It's not this wall. No, it's the Harabais wall. It's out here.
Ah.
Okay. So the I mean anyone who's Tommy Balkari, Thomas Zava Nida, we can't go into the Harabais area. Now what people do, and again this is controversial, is that they tov on the mikvah, so they get rid of their Thomas Balkari and then they go into the Harabais area. So that's what people do. But
the tunnel that they show in Israel and under the Kotel, is that the Harabais?
As long as you are east of the wall, you are not in the Har HaBayis area. Yes. Once you move west of the of that wall, I should say rather, no, the other way. Once you move east of that wall, now you're in the Har HaBayis area. Okay. Okay, fine. So Amar, sorry, Rav Yehuda Ramiksif. We are on Nundal Amud Aleph. We're right in the middle of the Amud. It's the last one on the line is Rav. And we're going to now talk a little bit more about the Aron in its place. Rav Yehuda Ramiksif. You'll notice the discrepancy between Psukim. We're in Malachim, so that means we're describing the first base of Mikdash. Now remember, the first base of Mikdash had a wall, a physical wall, separating the Kodesh HaKadoshim and the Kodesh. Okay, not like the second base of Mikdash, which we are more apt to think about, where there were just curtains. There were just two curtains. But there was a physical wall. Now, to understand this Gemara in the context of a physical wall is a little bit difficult, because the physical wall, it was hard. It was a hard wall. So the even though there was a wall, obviously there was an opening. So I'm imagining right now that what the Gemara is about to describe is that the poles are actually going through the opening of the wall. Because otherwise, it doesn't make sense what we're about to see. We're going to see the poles. Now we know that that saddling the two sides of the Aron are two poles. I'll tell you the truth. Well, here's what we don't know, or at least what I don't know. I don't know how long the poles are. We're not given a description of that. The Torah doesn't describe that. You tell me. I really don't know. But in other words, but basically, what the Gemara is going to describe over here is that the poles extended. Now we know the Kodesh Kodashim area is 20 by 20. 20 amas by 20 amas. So the poles extended and encroached into the Heichal area. That's what the Pasuk in Malachim seems to describe. And the reason why it seems to describe, because it says, Vayiru Rosh HaBadim. We actually saw the poles. Uksiv Velo Yiru Achutza. But on the other hand, same Perek in Malachim, it also says they were not seen. So seen or not seen. Talking about the poles of the Aron. So the Gemara's resolution, a really simple resolution. They were seen and they were not seen. Okay, good. Everyone get that? Perfect. Tanya Nami Hach, the Gemara says, you'll understand it better in just a moment. Tanya Nami Hach, Vayirosh Habadim Yachol Lo Yehu Zazimim Koman Tamalama Vayarichu Habadim. They extended. Yachol Yumakrim Baparoches. Now they're going to cut through the curtain. Now again, it's hard to understand because this is the first base of Mikdash. What curtain are we talking about? Right. So the way I'm imagining it is that there was an entrance into the Kodesh HaKadoshim and the curtain was there to cover the entrance. That's how I'm imagining it.
If that's the case, when the poles are there, how could if the poles are hugging the parochet, how could the Kohen Gadol stand between the two?
It's not a great answer, but something like limbo. In other words, he would just duck his head to get in between them, right? Something to that degree. Again, the second temple, this didn't become an issue because there were no poles. Yes. Correct.
Even in desert when they were doing it.
Yeah, understood. Totally understood. So I'm imagining he ducked his head.
Why did he say the poles?
And he went between. It was between the poles.
Why do you say it's the first base? I mean, the second.
Well, you'll see. You'll see why. The second base of Mikdash didn't have an iron. Didn't have bottom. Okay, so Yachol Yumakrim beParoches v'Yotzin Tamalama v'Lo Yirachutza Haketsa Dochen Avoltim v'Yotzin beParoches. So the Gemara describes now that they went a little bit outside, meaning that the poles of the Aron extended a little bit beyond, but we didn't see them. So if we didn't see them, so what happens? So they basically protruded and they pushed against the curtain. So again, the way I'm describing it, the way I'm visualizing it, is that we're talking about the opening of the wall, because there had to be an entrance, and the curtain that covered that opening. That's my visualization. But that doesn't mean I'm right.
For me, it sounds like you would see it outside, somebody poking like you push. Like,
you're correct. I understand. No, I understand that, but I'm just...
Not the wall.
Correct. But the problem that I'm raising is that if we're talking about the first base of Mikdash, which we are, so then it's a physical wall.
Rashi agrees.
Okay, so, and I get agreement.
Okay.
So, okay, good. So uvoltim v'yotzim. Okay, I understood. Uvoltim v'yotzim beparochus v'nirin kishnei dadi isha, and it looks like the front of a woman. Shenamar, and the Gemara here quotes the pasuk in Shir Hashirim, which is the natural place to go to when you're describing the relationship between Hakadosh Baruch Hu and Bnei Yisrael. Tzro hamor dodi li. The tzro hamor, the packet of spices that my beloved gave to me. So where does a woman place it? Ben shadayalin. So she places it between her chest. So the Gemara over here, everyone see the imagery? Meaning that the two poles are the Shnei Dadei Isha, And the Ketoros, where is the Ketoros placed? Bein shnei dadi ishim. Between the two poles. I'm Rav Ketina b'shasha Yisrael olon l'rego magal l'hemes ha'parochas. Okay, aliyah l'rego. So we would go up to Yerushalayim, and what would happen? So they would peel back the curtain, so we would be able to see. Omar l'hemes ha'kruvim, and we would actually see the kruvim. We would see. Now again, the kruvim over here could mean. I saw Rabbi Kornfeld discuss this at length. So it could mean the kruvim that are on top of the aron. It could mean the kruvim that were made by Shlomo HaMelech that were alongside the aron. Okay, see Rabbi Kornfeld for a lengthy discussion of which kruvim we're talking about. But anyway, shayim urim zebazeh, and they were embracing one another, the kruvim. Va'omram lehem ruchi batzchem l'fnei hamakom, and that was a demonstration of the love that existed between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Jewish people. Kechiva zachar nekeva. And the Gemara here says it's like the love of a man and a woman. So Rav Chista says, wow, am I troubled by that? Meaning, and it's not the imagery. The imagery doesn't trouble him. You know what troubles him? You're going to peel back the curtain of the Kodesh HaKadoshim? We're going to see the kruvim? Like, what is going on? In fact, we know that Levim carry the clay HaMikdash. They were never, the Levim were not allowed to see the Kalim. And what the Kohanim would do is the Kohanim would pack it away and cover everything before the Levim came to carry it. And so basically what Rav Chisda is going to ask is, how in the world could they peel back the curtain to allow people to see the Kruvim when the Levim couldn't even see the Klei HaMikdash? So the pasuk says, "V'lo yavo l'ros kebalas akarsh va'amar Rav Yehuda amar Rav b'shas achnasas kelon ner tak shalem." So they would pack everything away. Amar Rav Nachman. So Rav Nachman says, "Fine, you're right, but you're not right. Meaning you're right. The Levim themselves could not see the kelim, and the kelim were packed away before the Levim carried anything. You're right. Once we got to the base of Mikdash, so now." The relationship between Bnei Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is so strong, then we're allowed to see. And the Gemara gives a powerful mashal. Mashal akala calls manshi beveis aviyat znuwa mi bala. When the kala is in her father's house, meaning they're not married yet. So when she's in her father's house, so she's snuwa mi bala, right? She's modest. But kevin shabat la beis chameh. But once they're married, ainat snuwa mi bala. She's no longer snuwa from her husband. So the Gemara says, that's Asana Kash Baruch Hu. Asana Kash Baruch Hu prior to Beis HaMikdash, so we were, so to say, like engaged in this mashal. But then after the marriage, after the binyan Beis HaMikdash, so then we were married, and so therefore, we could expose ourselves to the Kruvim. Meisav Rav Chana Bar Rav Ketina Meisav B'Kohen Echad Shia Mesaseg. So the Gemara says, yeah, but let's now move to the second Beis HaMikdash. Second Beis HaMikdash, Even if we were going to reveal where the Aron was kept, that person died. Meaning, so what happened there? Amar lei nizgarsha kamart. Second Beis HaMikdash, says the Gemara, we're divorced. Even during the second Beis HaMikdash, the Gemara says we're divorced. Nizgarsha chazul chibata rishona. So the Gemara says we go back to our original love. Our original love over here doesn't mean newlywed. Original love means we go back to that period where, right, they beveis avia. She's in her father's house. I mean, we go back to the point where she has to be tznua in front of her husband. Okay, so interesting, by the way, the Gemara says it very explicitly, that even during the second Beis HaMikdash, so we were, that's gerushin. In other words, that's still considered a divorce between the Jewish people and the Kadosh Baruch Hu. I told you this before, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky in his work, Emes Yaakov, so he mentions, I quoted Rav Yaakov yesterday, so he mentions that the second Beis HaMikdash was built, but they knew it wasn't going to last. Even though it lasted 420 years. But when they built it, they knew that it was a temporary building. They knew it wasn't the final Beis HaMikdash. And the Gemara over here speaks to this idea very powerfully, how it was a garrison period even during the second Beis HaMikdash. So, b'mayiskin, ani neme b'mikdash rishon mihava perochis ela b'mikdash sheni, mihava kruvim. So the Gemara now is just a little bit confused, meaning, if we're talking about the first Beis HaMikdash, so there wasn't a peroches. And if we're talking about the second Beis HaMikdash, there wasn't kruvim. So la'olam b'mikdash rishon, my peroches debave. So the Gemara says, we're talking about the first Beis HaMikdash and the peroches of the gate. Right? Bavi is a gate. Right? Baba Kama, Baba Metzia, Baba Basra, the gates. First gate, second gate, last gate. Anyway, so the Amar Rabbi Zera Amar Rav Shosha Asar Parochas Hayu BeMidrash. There were 13 curtains to the Beis Hamikdash. Shiva Kenegas Shiva Sha'arim. Seven correspond to the seven gates. Shtaim Achas LePischo Shal Hechav Achas LePischo Shal Ulam. One for the entrance of the Hechav. One for the entrance of the Ulam. Shtaim Bidvir. V'Shtaim Kenegdan Ba'aliyah. Two in the actual building itself, meaning separating the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. One on the first floor, one on the second floor. Remember, we described how in the Beis HaMikdash are essentially are two floors. So, okay. So, in other words, that's we're talking about the first Beis HaMikdash, and we're speaking about that parochis. Meaning, not the parochis that actually separates the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim, but the parochis that was up against the door.
Okay. Is there any entrance or access to the second floor? Above the Kodesh
HaKadoshim? I think so. The Gemara, the Mishnah has a Midos, described it in detail, but I believe so. Rav Adar bar Yaakov Amar La'olam b'mikdash sheni. Maybe we could suggest that it's talking about the second base of Mikdash. Now, it's a funny suggestion of the Gemara because the Gemara just got done saying, just a couple lines earlier, that the second base of Mikdash was a Gerushin period. And so we had to go back to its Tznuah, we had to go back to modesty, and we couldn't expose ourselves. So why the Gemara now is going to, you know, is going to suggest that we're talking about the second base of Mikdash, even though there was no Kruvim, it's a little bit strange. It's difficult to understand. But the Gemara suggests, maybe we're talking about the second base of Mikdash. Ukruvim did Tsurasu have a Kaima. And when we say Kruvim, we're not talking about the actual Kruvim themselves. They were put into Geniza. They were tucked away into storage. But we're talking about images of the Kruvim. Meaning in the interior wall of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, there were images of the Kruvim that were painted. Painted, sketched, etched, etc., etc. Stuart and I were discussing briefly yesterday. Tosfos has a lengthy discussion. Right? It looks like such a small Tosfos on the Amud Aleph, and then when you turn the page and you realize it's not a small Tosfos. And he has a lengthy discussion. He talks about the images, the painting of images of Kruvim. And, you know, it's funny how Tosfos begins. I didn't go through the entirety of Tosfos. I skimmed. Tosfos begins by asking a question. You know, in our Machzorim, so some of our Machzorim is describing, right? So this is like 12th, 13th century in France and Germany. Some of our Machzorim are beautiful. In other words, they have pictures of whatever, various pictures. So, Mitzrayim b'Machzorim, Tzuros, Chayos, Va'ofos, animals, birds. So Tosfos is dealing with a very simple issue. Are we allowed to do that? Can we do that? And so Tosfos has a lengthy discussion. Okay, not for now. I'm looking at the time, and this is a daf, and not for now, but see Tosfos for a lengthy discussion about whether or not that's acceptable. That's okay. Okay. In the meantime, however, what do we see in our Gemara? It's pretty clear. It was done. In the Kodesh HaKadoshim, along the interior wall, there was pictures of the Kruvim.
A mural.
Yeah, like a mural. Dechsiva is called Kiros Abayis Masav Kala Kruvim Vitmuros Pturi Tzitzim Vitzapi Zahav Miyashar Al Mechuka. Please don't believe that I know everything, that I understood everything that I just read. But various pictures and images that were carved, that were etched onto the walls of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the interior wall. Uksiv Kema'er Ish Ulevios. And it says Kema'er Ish, the image of a man, and his companion. What does that mean? My kamar ish leviyot amarava barav shila ki ish hamurab leviyashalo. It's like a man with his companion, with a woman companion. Again, reflecting, representing the relationship that existed between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Jewish people. Amar Reish Lakish b'shah shenichnasu nachrim lahechal ro kruvim hamurim zibizeh. Reish Lakish describes that the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Now, it's not clear from the Gemara we're talking about the first Beis HaMikdash or the second. Now, it is Reish Lakish saying it. So ostensibly, we're talking about the second base of Mikdash, but I'm not sure if that's accurate. But either way, Ra'u Kruvim Amuram Zebezeh. They saw the Kruvim that were wrapped together one with another. Hotziam Lashuk, and the non-Jews thought that was the strangest thing that they could ever imagine, and they took the Kruvim out to the market. In other words, they took it out to the public. Va'amru Yisrael Alo Shebircha Sam Bracha V'Klala Sam Klala. Can you imagine? This is the Jewish people. They give a bracha. Their brachas are serious, and their klalas are serious. And Yaasku B'Dvarim Halalu. And this is what's in their Kodesh HaKadoshim. This is what's in their inner sanctuary. Miad Hizilum. And they disparage the Jewish people. Shenamer Kol Mechavdei Hiziluah. Ki Ro'u Ervasa. They saw our nakedness. meaning they could not imagine that this was inside the contained the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Rabbi Kornfeld discusses this, and the popular question to ask over here is that we know the Gemara says elsewhere that the Kruvim were embracing one another, but that's only when we're doing Ritzon HaMakom. But when we're not doing Ritzon HaMakom, so the Kruvim were not embraced with one another. In fact, they looked away from one another. And so he quotes the Rimigash. The Rimigash asks this question. The Rimigash is the Rebbe of the Rambam. So the Rimigash asks the question, so how can the statement of Reish Lakish work? Meaning he says that when the Nachrim came in to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, so the Kruvim were wrapped up with one another. That's a sign of Ahava. That's a sign of Akash Baruch Hu having a strong relationship with the Jewish people. But one can only imagine that if the Beis HaMikdash is being destroyed at that moment in time, so the Kruvim shouldn't be enraptured with one another, Adarabba. They should be looking away from one another. So the Rimigash asks this question. He proposes an answer. There are numerous answers that are proposed to this problem. Rabbi Kornfeld, one of my Rebbeim, so he and his site, so he suggests a number of answers to this dilemma. He has a Mesorah. When he makes a statement like this, it has to be part of his Mesorah. From Rav Yochanan. So it must be part of his Mesorah. Okay, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow, today we talked about where the Aron is located. Okay, I gave you three possible places to start looking. We talked about the Badim and the protrusion of the Badim, and we talked about the relationship between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Jewish people. And we ended off with Chorban. Tomorrow we talk about Binyan HaOlam, how the world was created and where the world's creation started from. Okay, that's big topics these days in the Daf.